As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
All right, everybody, welcome back to another episode of One of These Years. It feels like it's been a year, Colton, since we've talked. I'm, of course, Nick Baumgartner, along with Colton Pouncey. Lions, Bills on Thanksgiving. That was a long time ago. Here we are about a week removed. Hope folks enjoyed their Turkey Day. A tough loss, Colton, but also, like, one of those where it's, I don't know. I mean, it was one of those, again, where people got mad at a lot of the decisions, and we've been over that. But it was also like, yes, and I tweeted after the game, and you wrote about it too, and we're going to talk about some mock draft stuff and some other things here today as well, but to stick on that game first, because we should put a bow on that. You know, it was one of those where, yeah, I mean, Dan Campbell had some issues in that game, and I tweeted afterward, you know, there's development going on across the board with the Lions. It's really impossible not to see it. You have to kind of look for it if you're trying not to see it. But that development also includes Campbell. And it also includes the staff, specifically him, with some of the decisions and everything else. And that has to continue growing along with this. But overall, Josh Allen looked like he was about to faint after the game, that they survived a test for the Lions. They played one of the best teams in football to the wire game all they wanted. And, you know, you're a couple plays short. But you can be mad about that, but you can also see the silver lining in it. And I think that it's an interesting time because the Lions are probably at a point where you still need to see the silver lining, but it's not going to be too much longer to where you can start to get a little bit more mad maybe about some of those things. I don't know. What was your take on the whole Thanksgiving game?
Yeah, I think I said last week that Campbell's kind of playing with house money for this game.
And a little bit, yeah.
That proved to be a little bit wrong.
A little bit. Because I was like, he is and he isn't. You know, you never really have house money, right, in the NFL. I think we know that.
If they went that whole game without the sort of clock management, whatever you want to call it, decision making down the stretch that kind of became the storyline, I still think it would have been, you know, people would be less mad with the loss. But I think some of that had to play into, I guess, the feeling that it left after that one. And again, like, you're playing the Bills. That's a Super Bowl contender. Like, Josh Allen, for a lot of that game, looked kind of pedestrian. Like, he had his moments, obviously, but he didn't look like, you know, Josh Allen for a lot of that game. I think that's a testament to the Lions' defense and coming through and stepping up in some ways. But at the same time, you know, I get it. Like, you want to see some of those wins eventually. And I think people are tired of, you know, they were tired weeks ago, and then they went on a three-game winning streak. And now you're back here and you're losing a close game. I get it. That everything was set up for this sort of statement game.
Right.
If you're able to pull that one out on Thanksgiving, you got the spotlight to yourself. Everyone's watching. You were leading for some of that game in the fourth quarter, and then you just let it slip away. I get it. That's frustrating. But at the same time, like, what they do from here matters more than that game to me, because you've got a stretch here where you've got the Jaguars coming into town. That's a 4-7 team. Like, you can beat them. You should beat them. If you don't beat them coming after, you know, on the heels of that Bills game, that would be more detrimental to me and to the progress. So The Bills game is tough. Like, I get it. Like, people are frustrated, but it's what you do from here that's going to define you the rest of the season. And they've got an opportunity to tack on some more wins. And if they don't, that would be an issue to me.
Yeah, 100%. Because it's, you know, the Bills game isn't irrelevant, and the win and the, or I'm sorry, the loss and the fact that they played them tough can also be separated out as things that are good here. But I almost feel like if they had won that game, they would have been setting up a portion of the fan base for the Charlie Brown football poll, because there would have been people that would have been like, oh, the Lions are a playoff team. And it would have been
maybe 5-6 with Jacksonville
right,
coming in.
Right. So. And it's like, well, no, like they might not be a playoff team, because like Jacksonville and the Lions, this is a great, you know, this is a great test here for both sides, I think, or a super interesting game. Because you said it, Colton. It's a winnable game for the Lions, winnable game for the Jaguars. Jaguars are a super young team with a lot of young talent, just like the Lions, and they're playing well. They're playing confident football. Mm-hmm. And frankly, you know, as the year has gone on, the Jaguars have probably, in some points of the season, been better than Detroit. I think it's gone back and forth, right? We would say, what are the records, about even?
They're both 4-7.
4-7. So, I mean, they're right. They were in similar spots when the year started with the draft picks. You know, right? Everything else. They have different issues, of course, with, you know, the Jaguars have a better answer at quarterback right now, long term, and all this. But you're in a similar spot. And it's like, this is their peer. The Jaguars right now in the NFL are a good, young, hungry, starting to be well coached again, you know, with a better staff, football team. And the Lions, I think that we think that they're the same thing. I think that we think they're a good, young, hungry football team that's starting to be well coached. Not always, right? But it's like the Bills game to me was like, now you're testing yourself against the best of the league. If they'd won that game, there would have been people who would have been like, well, the Lions can make a playoff push here. And if they don't, they're losers and blah, blah, blah. They're failures. But this, you said it, Colton, this game here to me is kind of like, where are you at? Because this is still one where the youth out there is going to create a situation where we're really going to get to see that competitive, who has it and who doesn't. Because it's not going to be like, we're the underdogs and nobody, you know. No, like, you should probably win this game at home. And it's not going to be easy to do, but it's going to be disappointing, fairly so, for everyone if you lose it.
Absolutely.
And that's different. That's different. And they've earned that right. They've earned the right to have that, I think. But it comes with another challenge, and that's why this is now, I think, really interesting.
I think the Lions are favored in this one.
Well,
I would assume they are. Let me see.
I don't even know. I mean, maybe there's been another one in here somewhere.
Lions by one is the current line. So not by ton, but they're favored.
But hey, I mean, that sets it up, right? Vegas is thinking what we're thinking. That's
I can't remember the last time they were favored. Was it the Seahawks game? Were they favored in that one?
Oh, maybe. Maybe that's why people were so mad.
That was before we knew this. Yeah. That was before Geno became Geno and all this stuff. Then, so.
Yeah, and after we were like, I mean, the Seahawks actually look pretty good, guys. But okay.
So, I mean, and I agree with you. And I think that's something that Campbell's been saying all week. Like, he's almost been trying to warn us in these press conferences. Like, hey, this is a good team. They've got some talent. They're starting to turn a corner a little bit. They're playing well. Trevor Lawrence is looking really good of late.
Really good.
And that's a team that can beat you, like, if you don't come to play. Like, I think the one thing we've seen with these games recently, like, you go on the road against New York, you get up to play for that one.
Mm-hmm.
Players said they woke up thinking they were going to win. You know, they had that expectation going into it. Probably it was heightened by a playoff team and being on the road in that environment. Then you come home against on Thanksgiving against the Bills team that everyone knows is a Super Bowl contender, and you get up to play those guys.
Right.
So the one question I have is, can they do that again, this time as a favorite at home against a team that a lot of people expect the Lions to beat, but it's not going to be as easy as maybe some of us are making it seem, just because this Jaguars team has got some talent. They've got some pieces that they're working with. They're, in a lot of ways, in a similar spot as the Lions. Like, I think it's easy for us to say, oh, the Lions played the Eagles tight. They played the Vikings tight. They played the Cowboys tight for most of that game. And then the Bills, and just say, oh, yeah, well, the Lions should be better than the record indicates, so they're going to win this game. But if you don't come to play, like, you can get your ass kicked on any given Sunday. And, like, this is the NFL. We know that. So that's my one concern. Can these guys, like, you know, get whatever they were going through to kind of get up for the moment against some of those other games? Can they do it again against a lesser opponent At home in a game you're kind of expected to win, especially coming off that Bills game.
It's funny, the games, you know, when the schedule comes out, the games that the fans always circle. just the games that they circle is like that they're interested in.
Right? Oh, okay.
Hey, they're playing the Packers on this day, or they're playing at Chicago. And I'm always like, well, the games I'm interested in, the games that people are, because this right here, Lions Jaguars, was the one that I circled when the season started. Oh. I said, after Thanksgiving, we're going to know quite a bit about where they're at, right? We would figure, we talked about that last week. This is a point that Thanksgiving time is, we're going to know where they're at as a team. Jacksonville, you know, same situation as the Lions in terms of a young team starting over. So it was going to be, I knew, I had a feeling, and I think we all did, that the Jags were going to be a better team this year. After the Urban thing was over, they have a better coaching staff in there now, and everybody, most importantly, knew that Trevor Lawrence was going to do this. Like, everybody who knew Trevor Lawrence saw this coming. Yeah. So, I was very curious to see where both these teams would be, and this is a game, like we just said, Colton, it's one of the only ones on the schedule when you looked at it at the top, and you said, they're probably going to be... If everything goes how we think it's going to go, they're either going to be favored, or that's going to be like a pick 'em. At home, and if they don't win it, that's going to be a different kind of pressure and a different kind of challenge, and it's going to be sneaky and low-key, and it's going to fly under the radar for a lot of people, but like this is right here. These are the games where you learn how to win in the NFL, because you're supposed to win it. You should win it. And this is the challenge and the test, because the Jaguars are in the same spot coming back the other way, where it's like Doug Peterson, those guys are telling them, like, you got to go take it here. Like, this is a game where they're a young, hungry group just like you. You're not surprising anyone anymore. You're not, the scrappy, you know, little engine that could. Like, you've got to graduate on from that in this league. This isn't, you know, the Big Ten or someplace where you can just play that role and just be a team that upsets people now and again. No. You have to keep going forward. And so, for me, huge, like, chance to test yourself against a team that seems to have the same track that you seem to be on. And I think that we've praised the Lions quite a bit here the last couple weeks, and I think it's been earned. But now that pressure kind of goes back up, and I think that's only fair.
Yeah, Jared Goff spoke to reporters in the locker room yesterday, and I think he was asked, how close are you guys to turning the corner here? And Goff immediately was like, we've turned the corner. Like, we turned
the corner. Yeah, that's fair.
And for me, it's like, I agree with that to some extent. Like,
There's more corners to turn, though.
Showed a lot. There are more corners, yes. The three-game winning streak did a lot for just locker room, just the atmosphere in there, like believing you can win. Like, all that stuff is good for a young team. But for me, it's like, if you really turn the corner, these are the games that you're supposed to come back out and emphatically win, in my opinion. Like, I know it's going to be a close game because it's the NFL and teams' rosters are close and everything. Right. But, you know, especially coming off the Bills game where – we can give you a pass for that. Like, we get it. That's a tough team.
Right.
But if you don't come back the next week at home against a fellow 4-7 team and, you know, do your thing and win that game, you know, have you really turned the corner then?
Yeah.
Like, that's a step back. And like 100%. Campbell said after the game, I didn't feel like this was a step back after the loss of the Bills.
Mm-hmm.
A step back, in my opinion, would be a loss to the Jaguars. Mm-hmm. So, in a lot of ways, there's more pressure on them this time than last week. So.
Yeah, I mean, right. It's all on how things go, right? Like, I mean, Trevor Lawrence is at a point where he's surging, and he's at a point, I think, where as a young quarterback, it wouldn't be impossible, you know, to see a situation where the Lions go in there, play really good football, and get beat by Trevor because he decides, I'm going to be a superstar this day. However, unless that's the case, like Colton's saying, like, any other circumstance would probably be, a disappointment. Like, because you've got what you need to beat that team in every other spot. Like, ETN's a nice back. Okay, cool. You've got nice young defenders who can chase him down. Like, all the stuff. The one thing would be if Trevor decides he's going to graduate to Mr. X-Factor quarterback here, you know, like, that would be the one. But if that doesn't happen and he just plays like he's been playing, that's you still have enough to beat him. And so it's a different game with a different feel, and one that I think is coming along at the right time for this group. Another thing this week we want to talk about, Colton, and we'll get into some more notes, especially some Jameson Williams stuff maybe at the end here, because I know you spent some time watching him, and he is back. Did he practice last week? They did not practice because of the Thanksgiving, right?
They had a making few, this like, short practice. Okay. We weren't there for them.
Yeah. We'll talk about him in a minute, or a little bit here. We did our first mock drafts, I guess we'll say, of the year, of the season, we'll say. Because I think we probably did some in January, to be fair. So probably our 18th mock draft of the year. Yeah. But the first 2023 version that we really spent time on, of course, Dane Brugler, our draft guru, has also done his first round mock of the season, which is always important, always sets betting lines, as we always say, for Dane. Like, Dane always resets, like, Vegas lines whenever this thing comes out. But we'll talk about Dane's in a second. First, Colton, the exercise that we went through, and folks can read it on the site if they haven't already, you know, we went through a couple scenarios, right? Could you trade up for a quarterback? Could you stay? You know, all these different things. When we were going through the whole, I guess, process, what were some of the biggest maybe takeaways, you know, for you? I've had a lot of people that have said, you know, like, especially as Goff has continued to play well, and that's a continuing conversation, like, I'm not sure about this quarterback thing. What was your biggest takeaway, you know, when we went through the whole thing?
If you want a quarterback, like, in a lot of cases, you're going to have to pay to get one.
Yeah. That was expensive, drafting, right? Yep.
Where we were drafting at six, because we did this on Friday before Sunday's games, and they moved up. So some of those scenarios, like trading up to number one to go get Bryce, like, we sacrifice a lot of assets. And I don't even know if that would get it done in the real world.
You're right. Yeah.
Might have to throw in another second round pick or something.
Yeah.
And so I'm looking at that draft and I'm like, okay, cool. Like, we both agree that Bryce is QB1 in this draft. Mm-hmm. Getting a guy like that can set you up for the future. You have a young quarterback to build around, all that stuff. It's good, and we all know that.
Right.
But I also wonder, like, this team is not a quarterback away. Like, they have a lot of holes that they still need to fill. And so I get the idea of, you know, you have to trade some assets to get a guy like that. But at the same time, it's like, how much are we sacrificing the depth that we could be building, other roster holes that we could be filling? So that was kind of going through my mind during the process. You know, we had the other scenario where we traded up for C.J. Stroud at three, and now the Lions are actually in three, and I'm not even sure if I would take him at three. Yeah.
Probably so, not. Yeah.
You know, some of those scenarios, it's just like, man, like, these are kind of bleak.
Yeah.
More so than I thought.
With the quarterback,
anticipating going into it. And again, this exercise, like, I think people were kind of confused with it. Like, we said, we're trying to get a quarterback. Like, that's what idea here.
I think most people get it. There's some people that don't. That's fine. Yeah.
But honestly, like, going through that, I think that just, like, reaffirmed for me, like, at this point in time, like, I've watched Goff play the last five games. He's got one turnover the last five games. Probably should have a couple more that were just dropped or whatever. But
he's not take care of the football.
He's not losing them games. He's not winning them, but he's not losing them. So, you know, if you can, you know, build around him, he's going to get Jameson back. Maybe you add some pieces around him. You go defense heavy early. You get some impact players on this defense. Like, I mean, they're already competitive. Like, what does that do for the team next year?
Especially
you fill in some holes with free agency too. Like, spend a little money.
You can stack spots if you wanted to right now. Yeah.
So I think for going through that process, like, I even said when we were attempting to trade up to three to get CJ, I was like, it's got to be tempting to just do this and get Jalen Carter, right?
Like, yeah.
I think we said that on Slack, and I was like, well, we'll take CJ just for the point of this exercise. But now they're at three.
Mm-hmm.
They could get Jalen Carter, like, where they are now if things stay with the Rams pick. So it's interesting, man. Like, I get both sides of it. I get wanting a quarterback, but also it's got to be so tempting to go defense and just finally say we are investing in this side of the ball that we have neglected for years.
Right.
So
my biggest takeaway was about what I thought it was going to be, and I guess what I think it needed to be for the Lions, and that they're in a terrific spot here, like a terrific spot. The Rams are imploding, as we have documented on this show a few times, and it's getting worse.
Aaron Donald, add him to the list. He's got that
it's getting worse, experience. And it looked Sean McVay almost got his head taken off during the game last week. Did you see that, the shoulder pad thing? Anyway, so the Rams are going. I mean, it's bad, and they look like a team that, to me, it's a veteran team that it looks like it's shutting down for the year. I'm not sure how many more games we can just okay the Rams as wins. I mean, that looks like it could be a top five pick No yeah. question about it, right? Like that.
And McVay's talking about shutting dudes down.
So. Yeah, that looks closer to top five, maybe top three, than it does the back end of the top 10. Certainly going to be a top 10 pick. Like, that's a top 10 yeah. draft pick. No Easy. Question about it.
Yeah.
And so you already at least have one of those. The Lions pick is probably still going to be, like, it could still be top 10. I mean, I'm not going to rule that out at all. I still yeah. think it could be. It could easily be a situation where the Lions are sitting there at, like, 3 and 8. Okay, if the Lions are at 3 and 8, like, folks, like, this is, you don't have to do anything. You have to trade. You sit there and exactly what Colton just said. You let Houston take Bryce Young. You let somebody else trade up to take whoever they want at quarterback or not. And then you take the best whatever's left. And you say, if it's Will Anderson, if it's Will Anderson. We have now, we have Aiden Hutchinson and Will Anderson on our team. If it's Carter, then you say, now we have him on our team next to McNeil. That's yeah. what you do. And then at 8, you do whatever the hell you want. Like, that's right. You take a corner, you take Ringo, you take whatever. And suddenly, if you want to take the defense and say, we've turned this thing from a young, aggressive unit that's finding its way to a young, aggressive unit that's finding its way that now has superstars, like multiple superstars on it, like future stars. And so I think that, you know, suddenly shows up, and you look at the rest of the fact that you still have a pick at the top of the second round.
Yeah.
You can still get a that's a classic. We used to talk about that pick as, you know, I guess it won't be at the top anymore. It won't be at the very beginning, but it'll still be, depending on where the Lions finish, you get a quarterback there if you want. Like, that's usually where teams find the guy that falls or the guy that they've been kind of monitoring. So they're kind of set up to do everything they want here, is my biggest takeaway. It's like they don't have to rush or force the quarterback. Like, I think we've always thought about this. Like, I think when Brad Holmes first got here and they traded Stafford, Chris and I used to think about it like, okay, they're going to be really bad. And there's going to be a time where they're probably not going to have a choice but to go all in with the draft picks and just go trade for a quarterback. And that's probably going to need to happen in the first year or two. And they didn't do that. They decided to build the team first, which people at the time criticized them for. But, you know, I think that they've done a good job of that. And if this continues to go the way that we think it could with the draft picks, they're set up now to really have a very good football team that just sort of needs a quarterback to do his job and not put all the pressure on him, which would also be, I think, a great place for a young guy to learn. So
yeah.
to me, this is, I mean, am I reaching on any of that? But to me, this is, you're in a great spot. They are in a terrific spot. And that's why I think we were talking after they traded Hockenson and Holmes was giving that presser, and we were like, I think he wanted to just tell everybody, would you just shut up and let me get to the draft because we're going to yeah. be okay. Like, this is why. And, yeah, that was my biggest takeaway.
I'm surprised there was criticism of Holmes' decision to build the team first rather than go get a quarterback. I mean,
There was. I remember it.
Yeah, I get it. In some ways, like, you get rid of Stafford, and now it's like, all right, who's next?
Well, to be fair, the criticism was, in specific fashion that I saw from a few people nationally, was that this was going to be the case. They're going to have a team ready and no quarterback, and they're going to be lost. That was the credit, like the Colts.
That's it. What?
And yeah, because people look at these things as something that has just happened and they think something else will automatically come and follow. And it's like, when you're not studying something from the ground up, you miss all the nuance, of course. So as yeah. we're, yeah, we know that that's not the case, of course. Continue on.
I was going to say, I mean, in some ways, like, it's almost better to get the quarterback last.
Sometimes, if it works the way you want,
like,
it.
Mm-hmm. Like, if you can time it up perfectly. Like, I thought what the 49ers did, where yeah. they had a team in place that was ready to compete, and they thought they wanted an upgrade at quarterback.
Yep.
I know it didn't really work out, but I like the move to go get Trey Lance.
Well, you haven't thrown the towel in on that.
No,
though.
Not yet. No, he's just right. injured right now. I get
22, whatever he is.
But, like, yeah, I mean, if Trey Lance becomes the player that he was drafted to become, sure. all of a sudden you've got this dynamic quarterback and
and you're loaded.
A great defense. Yeah, you've got talent right. around him. You can compete for a Super Bowl for the next 5-10 years.
Right. Like, that's how you build a dynasty in this era. Yeah.
With a quarterback on a rookie contract.
Yeah.
Like, he's cheap and inexpensive at that time. So I feel like if that was Brad Holmes' like vision, like, yeah, let him do it. Like, give him some exactly. time to see it through.
Exactly.
And so what he's done, like, okay, we got Penei Sewell, like, first round. Mm-hmm. We're going to, you know, solidify our offensive line with this pick. next year we come back, we get Aiden Hutchinson, like we're finally building our defensive line out. Build from the trenches, then expand outside. This year we're talking about them getting, you know, one of the premium defensive players with number three if they get that, and also maybe a corner.
Maybe both.
And so even if they don't get like the quarterback in this draft, like just building out the team to a point where you can say, hey, we're a quarterback away from like really being able to take that next step. Maybe you can come back in 2024, and at that point you're ready to like trade the farm.
If you need to, sure.
If you need to.
Yeah.
Because you have less holes at that point. So you can use this draft to kind of, I guess, address a lot of those issues and then come back next year. If I know it's going to be tough. It's easier said than done. But that could be an option. Or how about this? This is something we haven't really considered. You draft a Jalen Carter at 3. Mm-hmm. You draft Ringo or Porter Jr. Mm-hmm. at 13. Who's to say they can't trade back up to the first round?
Yeah.
And maybe Anthony Richardson is waiting there late first, and they trade a couple of those seconds or whatever.
Right.
Whatever
right.
they need to make happen just to go back up and get him. Now all of a sudden you've got your quarterback of the future in this like toolsy, dynamic quarterback that
yeah.
if you develop him right can be
100%.
He can be your Trey Lance.
Yes, he could.
And then you've addressed defense with those first two picks. So the point is they have options. They can do whatever they want, and that's a great spot to be in. So,
it's the best spot, and it was like it needed to go. Some things needed to happen. A couple reasons. You know, they needed to draft well, number one, and he has. And I think that that's the biggest takeaway is that here we are again, week 11 of year two, and we're just not seeing a lot of, boy, that pick sucked. You know, we're just not seeing a lot of that, right? So he's drafted well. You did your part on that end. The other thing that needed to happen was these Rams picks, one of them needed to work out, right? Like, one of them needed to be better than 32 or whatever it was. And so last year they won the Super Bowl, it's 32. This year it certainly looks like it's going to work out. And so when they did this at the start, so much, and I should add in with the Goff thing, so much of it was tied with his contract as a disaster. You have to get out of that. You're not going to be able to add and all this. And it was like, well, they're not going to want to add. They don't need to add. They can rework that contract, which they've done. And so they're now set up to be in a position to where they can add people in free agency this year if they want to. They have money to do it, and they will have money to rework and mess some things around if they need to. The best players on this team, like Colton just said, are all going to be on rookie contracts. They're all going to be young. And so you can start to foundation yourself a little bit more and start to branch out and start to turn the pressure up on everybody. And if you want to take a young quarterback in this draft, be it trade up for somebody like, you know, Richardson, or sit there and wait and see if he falls, or sit there and see how low you can get Hendon Hooker, you know, or a guy like that. Like, you know, this is a good draft to do that for quarterbacks. It's not a great quarterback draft. It's not the worst quarterback draft, though. And I think that that's important to note. Like, I mean, you know the draft, Colton, you follow it. There's a lot of guys after, like, 4 that are okay. They're not bad. They're not amazing. They're not like, oh my God, but they're not bad, and they're guys that I think have potential to grow. Unlike in years past where that in-between group would be like, oh God, well, they're just, none of them are good. Like, they all suck, and none of them are going to make it. That's not what this is. This is a little bit like what we saw last year where there was a lot of guys in that, like Ritter, a lot of guys in that weird range where you're like, I like him, you know, like I don't love him right now. But I like him, and I think that you could grow with him. There's a lot of guys right now in college football like that, not just this year, next year too. So you're not in a situation where you have to go, like, trade the farm. And Brad Holmes needed to get them out of a spot where that was going to have to be the case. And so kudos, I would say, to them for that, because they've been very diligent, they've been very careful and patient, and they haven't made rash decisions or rash traits. I think they've thought about it a few times, and they've come awfully close, and there have been some things that maybe saved them from themselves a few times, but that was my biggest... Yeah, we go through this, and it was like, look at all this capital they have. I mean, and it all could work out exactly how you need it to, and teams could be calling you if you want. You know, like, you could do anything you want here, and I think that that's the thing, and you can start to find ways to stack talent on top of talent, which is something, I guess, I probably didn't think was ever going to be on the table at this point in the rebuild. So to me, they're probably about where they should be. And that's it's hard to say this because like they're where they should be along the way here, but also like that's really impressive because of how horrible this was when it started and how easy it could have been to fall off. And I think that that's like the we talked about last week, that winning streak to go into Thanksgiving was huge. Yep. Little things along the way, the culture. You can see some light at the end a little bit, right? Like when we do this mock draft for the first time in 3 years, you can see a little bit of light at the end of it. That is another takeaway, I would say.
Yeah. Just the winning streak, it kind of validated some of the things that I saw in training camp where it's like, I know the roster isn't where it needs to be, but they've got enough to where they should be competitive in a lot of these games. And eventually, if you're competitive in a lot of games, you're going to start winning some of those games. So it took some time for them to do it, but the 3-game winning streak, okay, got you to 4-6. You're 4-7 now. You've got like a middle first round pick on your own.
Yeah.
You've got this Rams pick where you don't even have to root for your team to lose anymore. Like, I'm sure that's different for Lions fans. Yeah, they don't have to be like, oh, we won this game, but I'm mad because we don't have the pick that I wanted. Like, there's none of that this year, really.
Yeah, man. Have at it.
And these guys, like, these wins are helping these young players. It's going to set them up for the future.
It's perfect. You don't have to tank.
The Rams are tanking for you. Like, that pick is going to help you. Like, when we talk about them being just so set up right now, like, that's what I think about. Just the stuff on the field, the stuff with the draft, the prospects that are going to be available with either of those picks. You're going to get players that will help you. It's just a matter of what you're targeting, what you're looking for, the guys that you're scouting out there right now. You know, they're going to have some options here, and they can really do whatever they want. And not every team can say that. Like, there are very few teams that can say, I can do whatever I want in this draft.
And I would add, they're not in a situation like in years past. I don't think corner is probably the one that we were both like, you have to go, there has to be an answer at corner in the first, you know, of those first three picks, you got to get a corner, right? That was it, really. There wasn't any other position where we were like, you have to take this guy here. I'm telling you, that was when we started this with Chris and I, with the Holmes thing, when we first started trying to break all this down, there was like 18 things. Like, you have to do this, you have to do this, or you can't, or you might as well just start over because you're not going anywhere until you do this, this, and this. Like, it's not like that anymore. You know what I mean? Like, they don't have to do anything. And I
think Malcolm at linebacker, like, Kirby at safety.
Yeah. The safety question's been answered. The linebacker question has been answered. I mean, enough to where I would say answered enough. You know, you can move on and you just have to keep going. And I think that corner is the one, and to a degree that's kind of like for most teams in the NFL, that's always going to be a thing. That's a good spot to be in. I think that when you look at it like that, peel it all back and you say there's just not a lot of places where you're like, man, they have to get a guy here. Tight end, I would say you probably need to invest somewhere along the way, but not like at 5 or whatever. There's not a gun to your head need. And I guess that's the big difference. And the fact that they're going to be in a position to really add talent. I'm not sure the Lions have had a general manager play the board like this, Golden, in my life. If they're going to be in a pretty good spot here, I can't remember the last time. There's probably been some along the way, but these two premium picks, I'm not sure the Lions have had something like this. I would, unless I'm missing something, this is why we need Chris around as the historian here, but this is a great spot. And typically we see the Lions go through these eras of struggle where they suck forever because, like, they don't ever have picks. They don't ever have the ability to do something like this. And this was a plan. And I think that this is like, this was the long-term deal. When we do these exercises, you can see that plan in its existence, I guess.
I know I'm a newcomer, but it's still baffling to me, like, how bad the Lions were, like, even like, you know, a decade ago, things like that. It's like, you had this franchise quarterback and you didn't build around him. Like, you had Calvin Johnson and Sue and, like,
how'd that not really work? Yeah, those right.
Yeah, I don't know.
Some of it was the contract stuff messed up. I mean, there's some truth to that. Like, Stafford was the last, what do they call it? Remember, he was the number one pick and he was the last guy or one of the last guys, and other people are yelling at their car right now, like, whatever the rule was. But, like, before the slotted stuff, like, Stafford was the highest paid player in the league or whatever. It's like a rookie year or whatever. Like, so the contract and the cap and everything, they did kind of get, because they built that team, it was all high picks and they all came up due at the same time, right? And it really was not, but to your point,
so though, the timing didn't work out.
Then. It didn't.
So we've talked about that.
Yeah.
Timing matters so much.
100%. That's what I was getting to. Yeah.
Yeah. 100%. I mean, even this year when we're talking about quarterbacks, like, there are some people that aren't convinced that one of these guys is going to be, you know, the guy that can carry over the top, whatever. They all have their risk that they carry. But that's, you know, if there's a guy like Trevor Lawrence at the top, like, that's a no-brainer, you know? Like, right. I get it. Like, the prototypical quarterback discussion. Like, when you're trying to build a team, when we're talking about Brad Holmes, you know, building through the trenches first and then building out.
And fitting it. Yeah.
And fitting it all into one and making sure the timeline is right. That's so important. I think that's just glossed over way too easily when we're talking about building a team. But what you just described there, to me, sounds like poor timing, I guess.
Yeah, well, and the difference is that I think you just nailed it. Like, right now, they're trying to build a team. They're trying to build. That was, they have a collection of really high draft picks, and they're just taking the best guys. And it's like, that's what that was. And they ended up having a really talented team that I think, you know, they got along. It wasn't like they didn't get along. But, like, could there have been better fits? Could they have had better, you know, this? Could there have been better draft picks behind those guys? Yes.
Sure.
And I think that everything we're seeing from them now supports the idea that it's a full-on plan. There's a full-on plan here that goes beyond just, like, we're drafting the best guy at every spot and trying to get the hell out of hell, basically, which is what they were doing after 0-16. And, like, to be fair, you know, they were 0-16. All bets are off. Let's just get talent in here and see what happens. And, you know, now you can see it that this is a plan. It still might not work. But, I mean, to this point, I have to say I don't think that there's a lot you can criticize in terms of that. Everything else has to go the way it needs to go. But here we are checking up 11 weeks into year two, and they're where they need to be, I think, in ahead of a really critical draft. All right, let's take a quick break here, and let's talk about Dane's projection on the other side, and then we'll talk a little Jameson, and then roll on out of here. So stay with us. We'll be right back.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
All right, everybody, we're back. Another episode of One of These Years, talking some draft here ahead of Lions-Jaguars, actually, because I don't know. I don't know if we want to break all of Lions-Jaguars down. I think it's draft season, ladies and gentlemen. And, of course, Dane Brugler has his mock draft out. Colton, do you have – I'm pulling it up right now. I think he took – did he take Carter number one?
He took Carter, third overall for the Lions.
So – he did what we were more or less just talking about, right? Where it was like, and this is how Dane has the top five playing out. So he's got number one, Houston, taking Bryce Young. Number two, the Bears taking Will Anderson. So that's good for Colton's Bears. That's pretty good. Lions.
Not my Bears.
Not anymore. Colton's hometown. Not my Bears. Colton's hometown Bears, we'll say. And then Lions stick at three with the Rams pick and take Jalen Carter, which... pretty good. Yeah. We'll get into it in a second.
I mean...
you've got Miles Murphy at four, and then C.J. Stroud to the Panthers at five. And then Lions' current projection on their pick would be 13, which is Joey Porter Jr. Dane actually has Kelee Ringo at 12 to the Steelers. So...
that was surprising to me.
Yeah, I mean, a little bit. I mean, I think that says a little bit about... he really likes Christian Gonzalez. I think that he's got him ahead of... Ringo. Yeah. I think he understands correctly that those tackles are going to go before they probably should, because teams need tackles badly. And Paris Johnson is one of those guys that, like, is really, really talented and is probably going to be good in the NFL, but is not there yet. And
yeah,
you're not going to say he's a better prospect today than Ringo, but he's probably going to go higher, right? So
yeah,
that is something, meant, right?
Like,
that go ahead.
I was just going to say, the Steelers having their choice of a cornerback, are we absolutely sure Tomlin wouldn't take Joey Porter just because of the bloodline?
No.
Like, that's his thing. Like,
no,
that's
what not he does. At all. Absolutely. So, no.
I don't know. Like, if he's there, I'm sure Tomlin's going to want Porter.
So, no, look, I don't dislike Joey Porter, and I think that's something we'll talk about in a second, but, like, Dane's thing on Gonzalez, I think, is mostly based on what he could be down the road. Like,
yeah,
he athletically is different. Like, his, I mean, shoot, his sister is David Blau's wife, the sprinter, the Olympic.
What?
Yeah.
I did not know that.
Yes.
Wow.
They're related. So
wow.
David, okay. David Blau and Gonzalez are his brother-in-law, right? So yeah. So, wow. Yes.
What could have been?
That is the background, right? Yeah, exactly. What could have been? That is the athletic background we're talking about here with Christian Gonzalez. I mean, he is, and he's long, and he doesn't have what we would probably say, like, Ringo is like the classically trained stud man corner who just, you're not beating that dude because he knows what he's doing and he knows how to play man coverage, right? Aaron Glenn would love that guy because you do not have to tell him twice. I think that the job Georgia does with its corners of teaching them real world how to play man coverage is better than anybody, and I think it's better than Saban right now. It's as good as it gets. So Ringo, if you're looking for a corner who's going to come in tomorrow and do it, it's him. Gonzalez is a guy that I think they look at as like, he could be something more down the road. He could be a guy that you move around. He could be like a hitter. He could be kind of like what Jeff could turn into, right? Like a real star type guy. Whereas Ringo, you're looking at and just, he's a corner. And he's always going to be a really good corner. And I think that's the situation there. But either way, if the Lions were to stick it, I mean, Jalen Carter, Colton, on this defense, could you sort of walk us through what you think that could look like maybe a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, he's just so explosive in the interior. Like, he has, like, game-wrecking ability up there. I think when you're thinking about his fit with this defense, like, they've kind of rotated some dudes in next to Aleem McNeil. We've seen Bugs in there. We've seen some of those other guys get their chance. But to me, like, obviously they're missing Levi, but if you get a guy like that in there, he just opens up so much. Like, he's going to help Aleem. He's going to help Aiden. He's going to help those linebackers. If he's like creating pressure from the interior, he's going to give quarterbacks less time to throw. That's going to help your secondary. So I think getting a defensive stud like that at three, like, I know it's tempting to get a quarterback and some people might want Stroud there. I would take Carter over Stroud all day. But like, I just look at that defense and what that defensive line could be. Like, you'd have the best defensive interior, like young defensive interior, one of the best in football with Aleem and Carter right there. You've got Aiden on the outside. So, I mean, it's tempting. It's tempting.
Yes, it is. I think Jalen Carter is the most dominant force in this draft. I think that there's a chance he could go number one, just like Will Anderson. And I think that Dane, I think, has long been of the Will Anderson's, like, long-term future as a prospect is something that we maybe never haven't even thought about yet because he's that special of a player. And so I get that. And I think that that's why he's looked at as where he's looked at. But in terms of, like, right now, dominance, get off the ball and knock somebody, it's Jalen Carter. Like, he was the best. He was the most explosive, versatile, do-it-all, everything guy defensive lineman Georgia had last year. And that included Davis and all those other dudes. When you watch the tape and you unpacked it, and he didn't play as much, of course, but people couldn't do anything with him. And he got hurt on the first play of the year this year, I think. That's what it was. He got injured on the very first snap. So up until these last couple weeks and even now, I don't even know if people have seen the full version of him, but like when they
played Tennessee game.
When they played Tennessee, you saw it. And I think that that's the difference. And Jalen Carter is a generational type knockback guy. Like, you know, I don't want to say he's Aaron Donald or whatever, or Sue or whatever, but like, that's the type of impact we're talking about. We're talking about Carter. Like, that's a no doubter. There's no question. He goes wherever he goes, he's going to be an all rookie, whatever. Don't worry about it. Plug him in. And I think that when we talk about where he fits in this defense, like where he could fit, right next to Aleem, of course, but like, I think you could even expand beyond that. Like, you could mix fronts suddenly. Yeah. You know, we've seen the things that Aiden can do as a dropper. You can start doing more with him standing up. You can play Jalen Carter as a heavy end. Like, oh my God. Like, there's so many different things you could do with a guy like that in the middle that can move around and do all the stuff he can do. He's just it's as premium defensive talent gets to me right now, because that's probably the difference. And we'll get more into the weeds on that down the line, the Carter-Anderson difference, but like, if you're just looking for somebody to come in tomorrow and just rock some ass, it's him. Like, I don't think there's anybody more equipped to do that in the country. And so somebody's probably going to get him, though, maybe at three, right? Like, I don't know.
I don't see him falling outside the top five.
Like, no, I don't see him falling out of the top three. I'm not ruling out the fact that he goes one. I'm really not. Because or two, you know, or I'm not ruling out that he goes above Will. Because, I mean, if Bryce Young goes one, I don't think it's impossible that some teams are going to have Jalen Carter as number one on their board. And that would mean, you know, if you're number two, that would be the situation. So,
I think we all assume Bryce is going one to the Texans, but they have so many needs.
Sense. Yeah.
It does, because they need a quarterback and, you know, they're where they are. But at the same time, like,
they don't have to.
They don't. They really don't. And, like, they could, like,
they could really
Lovey is a defensive guy. Yeah. Like, their head coach is Lovey Smith. Like, he might just be like, yeah, I'm getting Will Anderson. Of course I am. Yeah, I'm getting Jalen Carter. Like, why would we pass up one of those generational dudes for a quarterback when we don't necessarily, like, we can get a second-round quarterback if we want. You know? I get it.
Like, what did real quick, what did we just talk about with the Lions? You don't have to. Like, they don't have to. Davis Mills isn't good, but, like, he is not a disaster, I don't think.
No.
Right? Yeah. Go ahead.
Or you could sign a guy just to, like, kind of
100%
get you by a little bit.
They don't have to do it. They don't have to.
That's a team with so many holes. And, like, if you get a guy, you're committing to him for the next few years.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the, like, that's when we talk about building through the trenches and then out, that would be the opposite. You get your rookie quarterback and you give him, like, nothing else to work with, basically, outside of, you know, a couple picks here and there. So to me, I don't think they have to, like,
I don't either.
It's not, I guess it's not as done deal as everyone wants to make it seem. Like, that's, I'm not viewing it like that. I would not be surprised if Will Anderson won. So I'm not trying to give anyone hope that Bryce falls to three or whatever, but I'm saying, like, if a guy like Jalen Carter's there at three for the Lions, like, I think you take him. You worry about the quarterback later. That's just my opinion.
That would be, you know, and that's going to be something now that people will look at and be like, oh, we could just get Carter. And it's, well, you got to be in the top three. So everyone needs to understand that, and like, some things need to happen for that. Yeah.
They change so
much. Oh, my God.
They change so much. Like, we just saw the Rams go from 6-3.
We do Austin Mock and I do the updated projected draft chart every week. And it is a wild scene. Like how crazy it changes. I mean, and so Austin does he has win projections, like, through his computer program that he runs through the whole thing. And, like, that changes. And that's pretty fascinating to watch, too, as, you know, teams' fortunes kind of come and go. But, like, just the basic, like, if we drafted today, that thing, like, the one that isn't projecting anything. It's like, if the season ended today and we drafted tomorrow, this is what the order would be. That thing changes. Like, freaking all the time. Like, every week, it's like, all over the place. So, we're still, like, at a point, I feel like we're still probably 3 weeks away, maybe, from maybe totally settling where this is going to be. But the next time we do it, like, the 2.0 mock draft, I feel like we'll have a really good idea of where, realistically, the range of what these two picks are going to be. And then I think we can really give a good picture of where we'll be at.
I'm looking at Tankathon right now, and I'm looking at the draft order right now. And so the Bears are at number two.
Yeah.
They are a game behind Houston, I guess, is what it's saying.
Right.
From the two, the difference between two, where the Bears are, and 13 where the Lions are is a game and a half.
Right. It's nothing.
A game and a half. There are all those teams are separated by like
there's tiebreakers,
inches,
and all this
and tiebreakers and all that stuff. So this could look very different.
A week from now, usually goes to the wire.
3 weeks from like now. So don't get too like caught up in the Rams pick is gonna be three. I get it because Aaron Donald's out, Stafford's not playing again. Like those,
it's kind of a mess.
Kupp and Robinson are out. I get it, but I don't know, man.
They're like, still a veteran club with guys that know how to win. So like that's why I'm not all the way on. Like I don't think it's going to be outside the top five because it looks really bad.
You never know.
And you might have even more guys be like, I'm not doing this. Like, you know, and like, I think like if McVay's talking about shutting guys down and just giving rookies a chance to see what they've got for down the line, then yeah, you could probably chalk that up. But like the only other team that we can look at and say like they're going nowhere, you know, they're going to be picking number one probably is Houston.
Houston, yeah.
I mean, they're probably not. I don't see many more wins on the schedule for them. No, they've got a little bit of a cushion now, right? The other one was Carolina that I've looked at, and I was like, they're going absolutely nowhere. But they just proved me wrong, and they got a win against a hilarious Broncos team last week. Oh, my God.
Broncos are at four, and that pick's going to Seattle. So.
Yeah, that's not – don't worry about the Broncos, ladies and gentlemen. So Carolina – maybe they're going to churn some out. They've kept some young guys. They like their coach right now. He's in an interim situation. So maybe
he's trying to win.
Yeah, so maybe they'll churn out a couple wins. And suddenly I looked at that and I was like, well, maybe that could be different too. I don't know how this is going to – like usually we're still a couple weeks away from really having a projection on probably where this is going to fall, I think, with the
range. The Lions do have a lot of games left against teams, like where their pick is at 13. They have a lot of games left against teams that are ahead of them, like in the draft order. They got Chicago, they've got Green Bay, they've got Jacksonville, they've got Carolina. So,
yeah,
those games are probably going to determine some of the order to an extent.
Like, yeah, absolutely. So. And I think that there's a lot of those left, and we'll see in these next couple weeks have a probably better idea. Last thing I want to talk about today before we wrap up, Jameson Williams back on the practice field. You and I have a story that's running Friday on Jameson.
Yeah.
So actually, by the time this podcast comes out around then, you'll have that up. We get into the weeds on what he is as a player, all that sort of thing, what maybe how he could fit in the offense. But just the basic stuff here, the update. So he was back on the field. I guess you walk us through the whole thing. What's the timeline and where's he at right now and what's going on?
Yeah, we didn't. So he was designated to return. Last week, which was actually kind of a surprise to me because Campbell had been saying probably after Thanksgiving.
Oh, okay.
But they activated him, or not activated, but they designated him to return a week earlier than we thought. So he was out there at practice last week. We didn't really get to see him just because those practices were closed in a short week.
Oh, right. Yeah.
But he was out there running around, and Campbell said, you know, that's what he can do. He can run.
He's fast.
So yesterday, Wednesday, was the first day where we kind of got to see him up close. And I was just kind of following him around. We only got 15 minutes. So I was just like, I'm just going to focus on J-Mo today. And he's going through some of these drills. He wasn't like in everything. They had some drills where you like run through the practice dummies and stuff. I guess they were trying to save his contact a little bit. So he wasn't really participating in that. But I did see him hop in the wide receiver line. They had some drills where I think – you have one receiver and you have a back end receiver trying to like catch his hip. So I think it's a simulation of like a DB running downfield with you. And J-Mo was just like outrunning these dudes. No one could catch him. No one could like get his hip at all. I was just like, yep. I tweeted that video. So he's just like created some separation.
And he's running fine, is what you're saying.
He looks very fast.
Okay,
he looks
that's good.
As advertised. He was kind of like half-assing some of the wide receiver drills where he's catching them and just kind of slowly turning up field. And then they kicked us out. But in terms of what I saw, like so the short bursts of what I saw, like he looks fast. He looks like a player that at the very least can go out and give you 10 snaps and just running go routes all day.
Yeah, right.
If you want to do that.
Which might be what he does for a minute here. I don't – have they said anything? I don't think it's like a secret, about the target date.
Campbell said it would probably take a lot for him to play this week.
This week,
against the Jaguars. So I would expect him to make his debut against the Vikings. Maybe he looks good the next couple of days, and they're like, you know what? You're ready. You can get
That's fair. Yeah.
But if not that, I would expect him to play against the Vikings.
But important to note that they are going to play him this year. I mean, he is going to play this season, and I think that the one thing I wanted to touch on here was how important I think that is, for a couple reasons. Number one, it was a goal they gave him, I think, in the summer. I think it was, we want you to play this season, and you want to play this season badly, right? Like, we all know that. He was a guy, he was dying to get on the field. And so I think it was like, we want you to have something to work toward, and that's what we're going to do. And so no matter what happens, you're getting out there and you're playing. That's if you're healthy and, you know, we owe you that. But also, he needs to get out there to get to not, because he's not, he hasn't played football in a year, right?
Yeah.
He's going to have to knock the rust off. You're going to be able to control some of that. And like you just said, you know, control some of the drills that he's being exposed to early and all that, get him acclimated with the contact. And let him go out there and just not have to worry about being a first-round pick, being whatever, and basically have, like, as much of a rookie experience as he can on the field in the next month, so he doesn't have to do it next year as much. As much, I'll say. Because next year, this offseason, what you want here, I feel like, is you want to get him in, let him go out there, run around for a couple games, make some plays, who cares if he catches a whatever. But then, you know, when the season ends, you want him like, okay, man, like, go at it. Like, you want him to then be in the, you know, in the gym, in the whatever, getting ready, and then ready to remind everyone who you are. Like, that's the offseason that you want Jameson Williams motivated to have. And I think that they're in a really good spot to have that if everything keeps going the way that it should. But it was important, because people asked us that, right? Like, the beginning, why would you play him this year? What's the point of that? I'm like, well, there's a lot of points, you know, to play him. And I think if he was the type of guy that didn't matter, I would say maybe it's a different deal. But personality-wise, they learned very quickly with him. Like, he is not... He is getting stir-crazy. He was getting stir-crazy on, like, day two. Like, he needs to have something to do, you know?
Yeah.
And I think that was important for him.
Carrying that football around?
Yeah, right. Exactly. Yeah.
Like, I never really understood the people questioning if he would play this year. Because every time we asked Dan Campbell, he'd be like, yeah, I mean, he might need a little bit more time, but we expect him to play. And then just because the date kept getting pushed back, and some people thought he would return by, like, the bye week, and that always seemed, like, really optimistic and aggressive timeline. Like, he tore his ACL in, what, January?
Something like that, yeah.
Like, I always thought that was sort of a long shot to come back midseason, but Campbell would always tell us, like, no, he's going to play. We expect him to play. And there's still some people that were like, he's not playing. Like, what a waste of a pick. Brad Holmes did it again, drafting these injured players.
Did it again.
Yeah. I'm like, now I'm like, all right, those same people, I want you to come forward, because if he gets on the field and he looks like the player that we expect him to be, even if it's in a limited
like one
snap,
time,
so limited action, like, you're going to be like, okay, I see it now. I'm sorry. Right. Like, you guys might owe Brad Holmes an apology for that.
Yeah.
But,
you
know, he's looked good in practice, so I think it's a matter of time. I wrote in my midseason predictions or second half predictions that Jameson will come back and he'll look like the player that they drafted him to be. And that's not to say he's going to go off for 140 yards and two touchdowns.
Right.
But if he's out there and he's taking a slant like 30 yards, you know, here and there, or, you know, he's catching a long pass, or you see him getting open, you see him creating separation, you know, that would be that was part of my prediction. I think he'll do that in these final however many games, five, four, whenever he gets out there. And if you do get that and you do see that, that'll set him up for next year. You can put him out, plug him as a starter, and say, all right, go do your thing. Like, develop the chemistry with the quarterback this offseason. You know, work with us, stay by the facility. We'll get the most out of you and take off next year.
It's just, I mean, move in with St. Brown or whatever.
Yeah.
Right? Just go live with him. I mean, like, it's such a good, it was such a good fit. It was a good pick. It was a good swing. And it was one that, and we talked about at the time, caught us a little off guard, because we thought if they're going to move up, it was going to be for, you know, a corner. But when they did it, it was like, well, I can't, you can't hate it. Because healthy, he was the best receiver in the class. I think anybody who really knows the game understands that that second level acceleration of his is a different deal. So we'll see. We'll see how it all looks. And we wrote about it tomorrow. You can check it out on The Athletic. Maybe next week we'll talk more about that. But before any of that happens, it'll be Lions-Jags. I don't know how many people are going to be there, but I am going to try to get there because I had this one circled. I think this could be an interesting game. We got anything else this week, Colton, for the folks before we get out of here?
No, I think we're all good.
All good.
We'll stay on JMO Watch here for you guys.
We will stay on JMO Watch for the next couple weeks. Who knows? Maybe he'll be out there on Sunday. Probably not. But if he is, we'll take credit for that too. But in any event, for Colton, I'm Nick. Thanks for listening. And we'll talk to you guys later.
Hey, football fans, this is Diana Rossini from The Athletic. Get the top stories in pro football snapped directly to your inbox with our latest NFL newsletter, Scoop City. Jacob Robinson and I will bring you the daily scoop of top NFL articles, posts, and podcasts every Monday to Friday. Sign up for free now at theathletic.com/scoop.